Welcome to the Creative Condition Podcast, an ongoing series of conversations and considerations to help people understand and embrace their own unique creativity for fulfilling lives and brilliant careers. My name is Ben Tallon. I'm an illustrator and author, and I bring 16 years of creative industry experience working with the New York Times, The Guardian, the Premier League, and more. And I invite designers, artists, psychologists, scientists, coaches, athletes, sensitivity experts, and all kinds of thought leaders to help us broaden our knowledge of creativity. Creativity is a fundamental pillar of human happiness, a vital ingredient in the solutions to our problems, but so often misunderstood. The show is supported by founding sponsor and B Corp, Illustration X. Take a look at their stunning range of illustrators and animators at illustrationx.com. If you like the music for the show, it's by Dirty Freud, who you can listen to now on Spotify and all good music streaming services.
I remember talking to a couple of them, and I said, look, you know, I'm proud to have spent more than 10 years in therapy, and obviously to speak to someone who's like from East London, from who's like 60 years old, she's like, oh, these youngsters, you know, they don't really understand what was happening, you know, you just need a friend, a couple of drinks, and they'll sort you out. I'm like, yeah, you just spent 10 minutes telling me how literally your friend at work was so drunk because, you know, they wouldn't even take in a taxi. Like, that's the problem, you know. Just, I mean, it's great to have social networks, great to have a support network, but you're not going to sort it out with three bottles of red, you know, and denial, you know, that's the problem. Like,
it feels like spring's finally here and Radim Melanic is returning to the show. 103 episodes after 119, where Radim and I talked deep about mental health, creativity, his indie publishing and all good things design. He is back with a double barrel release of Creativity for Sale and The Mindful Creative. And we're getting into all things creativity. This is The Creative Condition. Hello and welcome to the show. How are you doing? I thought I'd give spring a little mention there at the top of the show because, well, the birds are loud this afternoon. And while I've got the sound absorbing panels in the studio and the half decent microphone, those little guys just want quiet and I don't want it any other way. So welcome them onto the show. How are you doing? I hope you're good. The sun is shining, it really does give you a kick up the arse, doesn't it? I mean, I know I go on about the climate crisis on this show and about my fears around all that stuff, but you know what? When spring comes and that sun's out, it's lovely. And on a really simple level, it's just good for you. It's just good for you, for the soul, for your skin. Let's not talk about the weather, that's a bit boring. Radim's back on the show. I saw Radim talk, given his presentation, No Risk, No Story, at Off Festival the other week in Barcelona. It was fantastic. He, like myself and Stefan, was on the main stage, on the root stage, which was very cool. Big audience, interesting dynamic for speakers. Last time Radim and I talked, back on episode 119, it was at Kingston University, where we were both part of a symposium event that they were putting on. And we were talking about, I don't know, 50 people, maybe more, maybe between 50 and 100 people, you know, in a smallish, very modest university lecture theatre. So while that was nice and it was quite intimate, you know, Off, given the size of it and the energy there, is a whole different thing. You know, it's why, as I mentioned on last week's show, I was nervous before I hit the stage. I'm not entirely sure how Radim felt, but we did exchange messages on the other side of the festival about, you know, the crash afterwards. And anyone who's been to any festival will know what that feels like, the kind of lull in the first half of the next week and that struggle to find the same zest. But find that zest we must, and that's one of the more interesting parts of today's conversation, which I will discuss in a minute. But first, big thank you to the founding sponsor of the show, Illustration X. They've been here since day one back in 2016. Check out their global range of illustration and animation portfolios, covering all kinds of styles from live to fashion to lettering to murals to anything custom in between you can think of. They're out there worldwide, illustrationx.com, and they're also recently certified B Corp, doing a lot of good work for our industry. So, yeah, as I mentioned, you know, we don't always have a choice in terms of tuning into our creativity. We have to make it work to satisfy our clients and the people who rely on our services. And that's an interesting little segue into one of the two new books that Radim has released, which is Creativity for Sale. So these two books came out very close to my own, The Creative Condition. And I was very curious to see what Radim had been up to, because I very much enjoyed his Book of Ideas series when he first took the plunge into indie publishing. And we covered that stuff reasonably in depth on episode 119. I do recommend going back and having a listen to that one before you dive into today's show, even though it's not a prerequisite. Today's show very much stands alone, but if you want to hear more of the backstory of Radim himself for some more layers on this chat that we're about to have, then I do suggest you head back into the archives on your preferred platform, or if you're listening to this, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. But Radim's a dynamo. He's a workhorse. And we talk in this conversation about the need to tune into your creativity when it's required. And it's not always on our client's behest. You know, that could be for something we need it to do at any given time. And I also saw Sir John Hegarty writing something along these lines recently, and he had some interesting thoughts. And one of his suggestions for staying creative was reading wide and reading well, and filling the mind with lots of sensory input and influences and inspirations, because when you then need to draw upon ideas, provided you balance that with rest and the unconscious, which is another thing Radim and I are going to talk about today, then the chances are the ideas will be there. The ideas will formulate when you plant the seeds for whatever the current project that is on your desk looks like. Now, I very much used to believe that creativity cannot be tamed. It's a monster walking its own path. And to go back to Stefan, who I mentioned earlier, in his film, The Happy Film, he talks about Jonathan Haidt, his psychologist at NYU's analogy of the elephant and the rider, that the elephant is the kind of instinctive, dynamic form of ideas making and direction, where it's not looking ahead, it's just got its head down and it's charging headlong. And the rider, our conscious mind, is very much the logician, if you want to say that, that keeps the elephant guided, that changes that course and that trajectory. And I used to sort of go with that idea that no, creativity happens on its own terms, we can only follow it, we can mold it, we can move around it. Now, there is some truth in that, there is a grain of truth. But to Radim's point, when we have our conversation today, and to what Sir John Hegarty was getting at, is that that's not always the way. We have to deliver sometimes, and we have to work, and we have to keep progressing on our, be it on our own terms, be it for our clients. So really, to think that we can just expect everyone to wait, including ourselves, for an idea to generate, he's a little naive at times. And there is, again, there's a little grain of truth in there, because there are days when we all have block, when we just can't get going, when we can't get motivated. But I think that comes down more to physical and mental energy, spiritual energy, if you want to look at it like that. You know, I think there's a lot going on in terms of, have you eaten well? Have you drunk too much? Did you get to bed at a decent time? Did you get up? Was your sleep broken? Have you got young kids? Are they fucking around with your ability to think clearly and straight? So there's a lot going on there that we do have control over. And the more I spend studying this creativity stuff, the more that I actually believe we have a lot more agency over this than we allow ourselves to believe. And it's sometimes a kind of easy fallback to go, nah, I was upset, or I had that thing going on. Again, there's going to be those moments, don't get me wrong. There's been days when I just couldn't go into work, so I was either sick or I was gutted or whatever it was that was going on. But as I get older, maybe not wiser, but as I get older, there, Radim is absolutely right. We have to deliver. And that's the genesis of Creativity for Sale. He's helping you find the structure to make that as possible as it can be. And that will only improve with your experience. You know, me personally, recently, I keep speaking of this dip that I had, very much up my own ass in terms of thinking. And there's a lovely quote in Radim's The Mindful Creative, the sister book to Creativity for Sale. And it's attributed to Buddha. This is, nothing can harm you as much as your own thoughts unguarded. fantastic. Absolutely love that. Full of sound bites, that guy. And it's true. And that's what was wrecking me. Again, to go back to Now He's Better with Stefan, the point was the problems I was stressing over were very real. Of course they are. They're out there. They're documented for good reason on the news. But they were massive. They were on steroids. And they were over the hill screaming. And I was just dragged along on a rope. You know what I mean? So it's about managing them, recognising them, stepping aside and observing what we're doing with our mind and our body. I'm not going to prattle on anymore because that's the kind of stuff we're talking about in today's podcast. So I wanted to sort of dive into this one, and I did prepare, I always do. But this was a very bare bones preparation because Radim and I just have a flow when we talk. And we're both talkers, we're both full of beans when it comes to this stuff. And we did this ahead of Off Festival knowing that we would be smashed on the other side of it and pretty shell-shocked from all the inspiration and the high energy of that conference, you know. So there you have it. You can check him out at radimmalinich.co.uk. That's radimmalinich.co.uk. Also, I want to thank the Ukrainian Institute I've been supporting recently. You can connect the Ukrainian creative community with whoever you think is beneficial. If that's yourself, giving them a commission, if that's sharing some work online, only takes a few clicks sometimes. But these guys are working hard to stay creative, to remain positive, despite the horrible war that they're engulfed in at the moment. So please do check them out at ui.org.ua. That's enough from me. You can get the Creative Condition book right now at bentallenwriter.com/shop for signed copies. Still having teething problems with the Amazon. That is going to be coming. The audiobook is going to be starting production soon. I have infinitely more respect for Radim, having had to try and go through this process now with Amazon, to know just how far he's come with, I think it's 6 books he's up to now. It's ridiculous. The man's tenacious, he's a fighter, and he's making it happen, and he is an inspiration, and he has been very selfless with me helping out. So, you know, if you can afford it, grab all 3 books, Creativity for Sale, The Mindful Creative, or my own, The Creative Condition. Not going to recommend one or the other, because like I mentioned a few episodes ago, I think it's wonderful, whether it's through podcasts or through books, that there are this stable of creatives who are making work around creativity to help other people, and putting it out there because we care and we see the importance of it and we want to share what we've learned. So on that note, here is my conversation with Radim Malinich. I feel like, why, I want to know your why with this, because I sat with your books last night and I've been flicking through them over the last few days, and they're fantastic, by the way. They're beautiful, but more importantly to me, the content very much aligns with all of this stuff that I'm doing around creativity. So I'm interested in your why, because much like myself, we don't get out of bed and do this stuff if we're not passionate about it, if this is not a part of our broader life, because it's a hell of an undertaking to tackle the topic of creativity and present it in a way that you can articulate. So why? Like, you know, what brought you to a stage? I guess I'm speaking particularly more in respect of the mindful creative, because that's the one that really aligns with what I'm writing about in a very different way in The Creative Condition. So what's your cause? You know, why creativity? And I know you do it for a living, but there's got to be a bigger picture than that for you.
I think my why, and thank you for that question, I think my why is about helping my former self, if that makes sense. Because we swim up the current all the time, and we only know a little bit. You don't always have the full toolkit in knowing how to navigate those choppy waters. And, you know, most of us get into creative industries because we like the thing, you know, we like the what. And sometimes try to wonder about how. And it can easily, you know, take you under that, you know, that strong current and goes, you know what, you know, this is how it operates. Because to have everything in place, you have to look at the size of a cruise ship or size of a, you know, cargo ship. Like there's a lot more particles to keep that all above the water, all with things intact. You know, obviously there's turbulences, there's choppy waters, but you need a lot more than just a surfboard going out and thinking, you know, I can do this. So hypothetically, we can be, you know, I mean, armed with our pencils and, you know, laptops and that kind of stuff, but the infrastructure that we need behind us or with us is a lot more needed and bigger. So I think the whole why is why not? That's the first why. Like, because no one can tell you these days that you can't do it. You know, like the world has changed, like nothing's gate kept. So being enabled to do this is the first why. Like, why? You know, because no one's stopping me, and actually I can take control of this and I can actually invent my own dream future. The second why is by sharing what I found through personal escapades, you know, maneuvers, you know, experiences, mistakes, failures, to kind of share that back, just to tell people that they are not alone making those mistakes, or not alone feeling what they feel, because we feel everything exactly the same. However, we don't feel open to talk about it, especially in the past. We were not talking about it, you know, like, so it was more caged. So as opposed to, you know, admitting, you know, well, actually, I don't feel right. You know, this feels scary. This feels not, I feel like I'm alone in this. You go, yeah, I'll have another pint. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'll have another 2 pints, you know, whatever. And then you're like, okay, then you just create yourself bigger and bigger problem. And the change in society, I think, is incredible, because we live in, I think, in, you know, this a revolution of a mind, if that thinks, because what are we using as tools, you know, mindfulness, yoga, you know, all of that stuff, is thousands of years old. Yet we're finally tapping into it and going, you know what? It can actually help us. You know, that's there for a reason. And my kids, my girl is nearly 8, and my boy is 4. And my boy's, you know, he's 4, and he goes to school, and he goes, yeah, daddy, that's a pigeon pose, and this is a tree pose, and this is a downward dog. And I'm like, they're doing yoga at school at 4, and he's like, yeah, I love this. I want to do this. You know, like, and I remember buying a DVD. Yoga DVD when I was 25, and I remember a colleague of mine told me, "Don't tell anyone because you'll get bullied."
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah,
So
you know. Yeah.
this is 20 years ago in a macho environment, and so my why is to say, "Look, I'm gonna be open, because it will help me to deal with everything, you know, the childhood traumas, adulthood traumas, you know, all of that stuff there, you know, especially." If you don't have a guiding light, someone that will just, you know, help you to straighten up after any sort of mess, then you're gonna take twice as long or 3 times as long to actually work out through your traumas and through your dramas, to understand how you can just get to the baseline. Not even like I'm in plus 10. I'm in just my foundation baseline. I can deal with everything, because that will inform better how I deal with clients, how I deal with myself, how I deal with my work, how I deal with new customers, how I deal with the multi-fragmented billion people on social media. Like, how do you deal with all of these aspects? That's where you have to work on yourself first. And the concept of Mindful Creative wasn't published by a no, it wasn't commissioned by my major publisher. It was, I needed to do that book. I just wanted to share those things, and it was a catalyst, it was a cleanser. It was like, you know what, I want to share this. I'm going to be as honest as possible. I'm going to talk about everything from, you know, nearly killing myself through working too much because I just was too foggy with clarity, because, you know, I was just subscribed to all of it, all the way to needing to spend at least 10 years in therapy on and off just to make sense of the first 40 years of my life, only to realize that the last 5 years have been the most crystal clear, you know, enjoyable years. I mean, nothing's enjoyable all the time, you know, like, we all have turbulences up and down. But it's, yeah, it's for me to share. It's problem. I want to create problem-solving titles that I wish they existed 20, 30 years ago.
And that's what's wonderful. And it got me thinking, you know, I have many friends in this industry, and within that there's this wonderful nucleus of yourself. You're doing your podcast now, the books you're producing. There's Katie Cowan, good friend of mine, doing the Creative Boom and her podcast. And it's that is a part of what you hit upon there, Radim, which is a much broader shift in social psychology. You know, the awareness now and the openness, and like you said, referencing things that maybe were once the norm of the way we lived as human beings, but were lost in this kind of ultra commercial capitalist world for a time. If while there are many reasons to be down on a lot of things going on in the world, there always were. But to be optimistic, to see all of that stuff happening, I think that speaks to the kind of incremental percentage changes that happen all around us, almost by stealth,
you know, because it's not the big headline, it's not the thing. But actually, when you look around and there's just, even within your friend network, people doing this, that's exciting to me. That's thrilling. And that gives me cause for optimism. Do you feel the same?
Well, absolutely. I think we have moved on drastically, in a good way. Like, we've moved on in the right direction. And I think when you think about it, the focus on mental health 20 years ago wasn't as necessary or prevalent, because we didn't have that sort of hyperconnectivity that we have now. So we now know more about each other, and as a result of that, we have more problems because our mind is a lot more overloaded than it was 20 years ago. So today, you not only know, and you can let anybody know what you do, you can know about everyone you want to follow, you know what they do, and most often what you're actually not doing yourself. So obviously we've got a FOMO and YOLOs and that kind of stuff that once upon a time was someone else's world, and you would literally just see the highlight reel, like, okay, you know, I've created this project, this is what I've done. Now, you know, people doing things in the real time, and you kind of see, like, okay, so it feels like a highway of creativity in life, you know. So you might be bombing in a Fiesta on a hard shoulder, not even bombing, you know, plodding, thinking, you know what, I'm happy, you know, I'm going in my speed. And you look to your right and you see everyone going in, you know, the five lanes in their flashy cars, you know, hypothetical flashy cars, as fast as possible. And you're like, where's everyone going? And why does everyone look faster, better, you know, handsomer, fancier, more beautiful? You know, because you can only open, you know, it's a metaphor for social media. Like, obviously you see, like, okay, these people are shouting loud. You know, there's people claiming to make millions a month or whatever through some subscription services. And there's like, everyone's loud, because they don't really know where they're going. They don't really know if it's going to be working, but something somehow, like, we just sort of, they're projecting these messages out there, which are confusing, not only themselves, but everybody else around them. Because if you haven't got your baseline sorted, you're going to be thrown by all of these tremors and all of these encounters. Because there is something as a positive envy, you know, like, it's a stimulus. Obviously, you want to actually say, I want to be as good as this, you know? And I always go back to the book by Paul Arden. It's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be, but it's how good you want to be, you know? Like, you're going to take outside measure and say, I want to be as good as that for myself. You know, I want to be as good musician, I want to be as good designer, creative, or person, or husband. You know, sometimes you see someone who does things really well and you go, I want to be as good as that. But when you see unattainable results and you think, I will never be as good as this, then that's really going to mess up with your mind, because you're like, well, these people seem to have all sorted, yet they don't. But on the outside, obviously, like, you know, with the influencer culture, you know, when you see an influencer, especially when you see influencers in the wild, you know, like, it's a 20-second frame of, hey, this is amazing. And then, yeah, my life is dread. So it's we are riddled with this, because in the last 20 years, obviously, we've invented and democratized social media. And it's created the most confusing cocktail to our minds, because it's, when you think about it, there's no manual how to use it. Like, not the way we use social media changes, like, each of the channels, like, changes every year. Like, Instagram changes, LinkedIn changes, like, and you're like, okay, what do I do? Like, how do I navigate with this? And how do I populate it? And in my opinion is, how honest are you with your work? Like, what is it that you actually put into the world? Because the reason why I create books is because they're physical, you know, and books are selling more than ever, like in the UK. I think we created more fantastic tools for everyone. It's because when all is said and done on social, that's just a digital dust. Whereas we've been creating books for the last, you know, thousands of years, and we have this beautiful human sensory feelings to them. And that's why, you know, we can share in a way which speaks to people, you know, and influences them in the right way. And of course, you need to, you know, add tools like audiobooks and Kindles, because we're trying to catch people on the way somewhere, you know, on their little highway of life. You just say, hey, look, what's the best way to consume this content? Because you want to find a way in the right time to work on yourself. Because I'm sure you would agree, like, at this time and day and age, the information is being so liberated. Like, there's so much content that you can be a specialist on whatever you want to do so easily. You know, you can fill in that knowledge gap so quickly. The experience gap, that that's harder to fill because you need to actually go and do the stuff. But yeah, I think it's I think we are more inclined to be open because we don't have anything to lose anymore. I think this is it's actually more. I think it's more bravery in actually saying, you know, well, I'm not okay. I need help. How can we do this? How can I do that? You know, how can I help you? Because, yeah, that's how the world should now operate.
And what's wonderful on a kind of social political level is that, you know, the kind of old elites are clinging to the wreckage of the old world harder than ever before. And at the same time, you know, you got, okay, so they're kind of, not to take this in a political direction, but there's this whole brigade that are calling everything woke that they don't understand. And there's certain portions of the media that are kind of banging that drum. And to me, that's the old, you know, it's the wreckage of the kind of old white elite men are clinging to the world they knew. But all the same, despite the things they try to do to stop that, the rest of us are just getting on and progressing. And I think that's wonderful. You know, businesses are taking the lead, even though legislation doesn't necessarily legally bind them to doing so. People are waking up a little bit, you know, it's like, I think it's awesome. You know, I'm from Yorkshire in the 1980s. This stuff wasn't a thing. Like you said, it was, you know, I remember walking past a guy on a dog walk, and this was brilliant. This was in Manchester. And I walked past this old guy who must have been in his 80s and walking his dog. And as I walked past, just to make small talk, I kind of passed and said, morning, said, bit cold, isn't it? And he turned around and he went, aye, it'll blow your curls out. And it's just, that sums up that kind of old school, get on with it, stiff upper lip, you know, iron chin, which there is value in. But actually, with all this, you know, this exploration of the mind and the body and learning where we came from and where we're going, it's, I think it's magic, and it's really given my life purpose. And by writing these books and putting it into a format that I can share that with people, it gives me great empowerment and purpose in my own life and belonging. You know, these are fundamental human needs, not to mention the community that it brings us together in. You know, that's the reason you and I are talking today, because we've done these projects and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if I can add something to your old schoolers encounter, I I've got new neighbors where I live now, and you know, they're all from all walks of life. And then we've got kind of international street, and we've got some East Londoners and, you know, like Surrey people. And I remember talking to a couple of them, and I said, look, you know, I'm proud to have spent more than 10 years in therapy. And obviously to speak to someone who's like from East London, from who's like 60 years old. It's like, oh, these youngsters, you know, they don't really understand what was happening. You know, they just, you just need a friend, a couple of drinks, and they'll sort you out. I'm like, yeah, you just spent 10 minutes telling me how literally your friend at work was so drunk because, you know, they wouldn't even take in a taxi. Like, that's the problem, you know? Just, I mean, it's great to have social networks, it's great to have a support network, but you're not going to sort it out with three bottles of red, you know, and denial, you know? That's the problem. Like, you know, if there's someone is shouting on the bus, it's like, oh, avoid him. You know, don't go anywhere near. You know, they might be crazy. They should be locked up, or they need to see a psychiatrist. And it's just like the very colorful world was very black and white in terms of mindset. And that's, you know, someone once told me, like, that's pretty much like Hastings in 1952. You know, like, it's, you know, we are progressively getting better with influences, you know, multicultural influences and more understanding of human beings. But, articulating the life through experience in my books is I'm making sense of things, you know, like what sounds like you're tapping into your experiences, you're kind of making sense of things, like with a bit more of a head start. Whereas I'm like, you know what, there's millions of me out there in a similar situation and similar situations to yours that we're making sense of things, you know, like I don't feel no one gets the most ideal upbringing. You get kids who get really bad starts in life, you know, you get kids who get a really good start in life, seemingly, you know, like, but there's still some sort of emotional vacuum, like no one gets it right. And we are desperately trying in our lifetime to get it right, you know, and processing like, okay, I've seen this done before. I don't think it should be done again. Like, I disagree with how things were done before. And this is what I want to do for my future, for my career, and for my kids. And that's pretty much why I've been writing books, because I've seen creativity done stupidly, badly for the first 10 years of my career. You know, like, I worked through all sorts of environments, from small print shop on a high street in Southampton, all the way to the biggest advertising accounts in the world, you know, from with the biggest advertising agencies. And no one's got it right, because Some people just turn up with the expectation of filling a job role. Whereas I believe you and I just show up and like, how can I make this better tomorrow? Because today sucks. And you know, creativity should be this amazing topic, an amazing subject, and like everything to us that we should be enjoying how it is. Yet we are fighting here. We are struggling to create work. You know, I don't believe the work is good. You know, and you've got so many elements in your equation that needs to be fixed. And most of us, well, most of the elements are us first, because when we go through the ranks when we're younger, we want to change the world how the way we see it. This is my point of view. I want to change this. I feel this needs to change. I feel this needs to change. I think that person's not very good. Well, the problem is me first, because I've got, you know, I'm driven, let me just say, the creative industry is driven by ego, anxiety, ambition, insecurity. You got two positives and two negatives, and they are infighting all the time in us. You're like, okay, when you feel like you don't have to outshout people or finish their sentences or try to prove your worth, when you realize, you know what, I can just sit here and watch. I can just let everyone say their nonsense before we get to the point. That comes with age. You know, when you're 20, 24, 25, and you're in your job, you either just sit there thinking, I'm an imposter, I don't know what I'm doing here, or you'd be like, I'm so anxious and so insecure that I'm going to be just finishing the sentences just to prove myself that I'm contributing some volume, which is of no value. And that's the first thing you need to finish. Obviously, like, you need to then understand how the work is created and how do we use modern tools in a way that we can collaborate better, how we can feedback better, how we can understand each other better. Because I spend with my own design agency and with my own sort of processes just reconfiguring, like, how do I deal with multiples of projects, multiples of collaborators, ideas, and self-starting, you know, self-initiated businesses? How I can deal with all of this so it doesn't kill me over? Because if we were to do it in a traditional process, it'd be like, oh shit, like, I can't keep with this. Because back in the day, it sounds like a granddad thing, but like, you know, let's say 20, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, you would not be doing all of this stuff. Like, we would not be podcasting, we would not be broadcasting, we would not be, you know, putting stuff on social, replying to comments, you know, you need on LinkedIn, you need 15 words and more, and add an emoji, and like, we just add in layers, layers, layers. And it was much, much simpler in the past, right? Because, you know, that meme says, a DJ in the 90s was a DJ. Now a DJ in the 2020s is a social media manager, real content maker, and all of this stuff. And you're thinking, yeah, that's true, but I think that everything changes. Like, you can't just say, well, because I was a DJ in the 90s, I just should be playing with my records and do drugs for the rest of the day. You know, like, I mean, the life changes. And I just feel like it's just the magical part that we get so much more understanding how the world operates around us, you know? So to be launching a book, you can act like a publishing house. You can emulate what a publishing house does or has done in the last 40 years or 50 years. And you can do it with the help of two or three people. And it will cost you, and then £5,000 to do the same level of publicity. You know, you might not be in a Guardian and have your book reviewed in a Guardian and on a book number one, but you can put all the same ads. You can advertise your book next to Barack Obama. You can do all of the things. Like, you can actually emulate this, and that's the magical part, you know, because you can do you can create your own. It's not luck, but you can invent your own dream future. Because you can see what's out there and go like, okay, I can actually do this. Again, if I follow one step, two steps, three steps, I'm already much further ahead if I was be employed and waiting for what projects we're doing next or what I'm doing next, because somebody else is driving that future and I'm just a passive, you know, participant, if that makes sense. And I always see it like when you compare the perception of people say, well, I'm here for the job security, you know, I need to pay my mortgage. I can't never think of more something insecure, because especially with the current market, cost of living crisis, you know, it's still kind of somewhat of a recession and an ineptent government. You're like, okay, I don't think your job is as secure as you think, you know, and what you're doing, you can't fix any of these problems. You might be fixing one minute problem in a massive problem, in a massive issue. Whereas if you are on your own, you're like, okay, I've got a problem, but I can find out how to fix it. I can do it myself, or I can ask someone to help me to do it. But you're making more immediate decisions and changes and resolutions. And that will help you ultimately steer yourself out of an issue pretty quickly. So, you know, got no work? All right, well, let's put a marketing plan in place. You know, how do I do it? Buy a book, you listen to a podcast, you might do a course, you know, because that's strengthening ourselves. And I always, and I think forever, will be using the analogy of Usain Bolt, like when he sort of shows up for the 100 meters to run that race every 4 years as he used to do it. And what we don't see is the 4 years of practice, the 4 years of exercise, the 4 years of, you know, sports, psychologists, you know, the backroom staff, all of that hard work that goes in it. You know, like, he's a result of all of the products that he, that you know, all of the sum of the many parts, but it's up to him to run that 100 meters as fast and as, you know, he runs it for himself. But when you liken it to us, we run our 100 meters, we kind of go for our PBs pretty much every day, and we don't have a backroom staff. We don't have the sport therapist or masseuse or, you know, psychologist or therapist. You know, we don't have that. And we think that we can just show up and we not expect to just to stumble into a flow state and go, mm-hmm. Well, here I am. You know, I've got 3 minutes to come up with magic. But it doesn't work that way, you know? And I know you write about flow states, and recently was going through the Seth Godin's book, The Practice, and he said flow state is a mise en place. And I'm like, that's a good one. I wish I had that one first. You know, yeah, mise en place. It's just like you set yourself to win. You set yourself to win. So we can be expecting to be, you know, eating like shit, drinking too much, sleeping badly, watching Netflix, you know, not necessarily working on our business. We just let that flow. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to learn the new features in Photoshop. Well, that's not going to help anyone, is it?
Yeah.
You're not helping yourself. Like, and this is the issue. We can't get any, you know, any progress done. You need to set yourself to win. Yet most of us don't do it. And that's the major problem. That's the major problem. Mm-hmm. And kind of like, it just, you know, there's so many minute elements that we need to get right. And we don't even think about it, let alone work on them. So that's why, you know, you and I write books.
Well, that's it. Absolutely. And that self-discovery is brilliant because, you know, ultimately it's funny, isn't it? But right in the early parts of my own book and the research, I was setting out to, first of all, separate the idea that creativity is simply innate artistic talent. Not true at all. Creativity is why we're still on this planet today. You know, it can take on myriad forms. But to use any aspect of it effectively, like you say, you have to work on the body and the mind. You have to work on them as one. That's why recently I had a Polish microbiologist on the podcast called Zuzanna Kowalska. Completely accidental, but again, I was in that lovely serendipitous ear to the ground, you know, not ruling anything out. And she uses machine learning, so AI, to study gut microbiome. And this talk she gave, I did a talk for a Polish agency and she was also there. So straight away I was on her for a podcast, and she's brilliant. And she talked about, you know, the gut microbiome and the link between gut health and our mood. And then I had a psychologist called Kimberly Wilson, who's also a specialist in nutrition. And her thing is whole body mental health. So it's about taking care of the diet, exercise, the mind, and all the stuff. And that's the foundational aspect of creativity, because ultimately creativity is ideas that have value, that come from the self. So if you can't look after the self effectively and be energized in your life, you're not going to hit those flow states or optimal creativity, like you say, by learning a preset in Photoshop, whatever it might be. That's just simply a one extra little tool to enable what you've been working on. And if you haven't been working on it, or you're not at peace with yourself, or any of those things that are discussed in your books, then you're at a disadvantage and you're not going to hit those optimal, you know, you're not going to be your best self, to pull one of the big cliches out. There's a lovely thing, there's a brilliant Eckhart Tolle quote that you've used in the book, and it's about, you know, just being and existing. And it's, I think it's something we it's a big thing we all need to work on as a society, because, you know, smartphones, I think, have a real destructive influence at the moment. There's lots of enabling aspects, as we know, but we have to work on that. And, you know, again, staying attuned, being mindful, staying in the moment. And there's loads of stuff you cover in the book that are brilliant. Let's have a look, because I've got some written down here. But beginner's mind, I thought that was a lovely one. So if you wouldn't mind just touching upon that kind of that need to stay naive, that need to keep learning. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I think it's very hard to remind yourself to be naive, because you need to be someone something tomorrow, you know, like that's what the world makes you believe. So when you see the whole tussle between junior designers and, you know, junior designer role expectations and that kind of stuff, like, it takes a lot of time and resources to actually build someone if they haven't worked on themselves. You actually, you know, to help someone a lot, you have to spend time, resources, and, you know, if people get, for example, jobs with smaller agencies, like, to keep the boat above the water, it's incredibly hard. So to be learning and to actually to say, you know what, I'm just gonna find something new, you know, like, for example, like recently I'm in lockdown, I started cycling. You know, I've never had a good bike. And the beginner's mind is beautifully, beautifully dangerous because you don't know what you don't know. And I think that's, you know, that's the part of, like, I'm going to get started. And as you know, in my book, Creativity for Sale, I labeled it as the fuel and the feel. Like, you really want to get something done, like, and you don't really care, you know, if you're doing it right, if you're not doing it right. Because if we were going into everything with expectations that we need to be good at something, we would never start. Like, we would never actually allow ourselves to go and try. I believe it's allowing yourself to just suck for a bit, because the world wants you to be something somehow, somewhere today or even tomorrow. Like, I think the messaging is so convoluted out there that, you know, it seems like somebody just who wasn't anything yesterday all of a sudden comes out and it's like got 50,000 likes or whatever, 50,000 followers, you know, they've been celebrated. And you're like, how long is it going to take me to actually do something? How long can I, you know? Because it's a beautiful time to not be anyone. I think just to be invisible and to do whatever you want, I think is the most magical time you can celebrate now, because that's what we were before. Like, we were no one, nobody, nowhere. You know, like, we just tried to make a little tremor and we just only appealed to people like our directors, you know, okay, I want to work with this person, I want to work with this brand. Whereas now you're appealing to anyone, you know, like, you know, someone's mom from Puerto Rico can like your work because they just found you on Instagram, you know, and you're appealing to everyone and you're trying to, like, be everything to everyone at all times. And I think that's such a dangerous thing, because to be doubling down on who you are and say, you know what, this is who I am. I do this, you know, like, you're Ben Talon, you do illustration, you do podcasts, and you talk about creativity. We don't have competition anymore. You know, like, okay, I've allowed myself to accept who I am, you know, how my voice sounds, what I speak, what I say, you know, what I think, how I create, what I publish. I am now only still looking at me and going, how good can I be? You know, how better can I be? Like, we don't have a, you know, visual scoreboards to go like, you know what, I've improved against Ben, I've improved against somebody else. Like, it's about us. Like, hey, I'm, you know, looking at some sort of information that I can share with people, and I can actually improve everyone else's life. You know, it doesn't matter if I'm five meters ahead or 10 meters back. You know, it's just like, today is my honest day. And I think in that sort of beginner's mind, it's like, it's great to not know sometimes what you're doing, because that will allow you to get lost in things. Mm-hmm. And I've shared through many of my books that, you know, I was always in the business of I don't know. So I wanted to be an ice hockey player before I could ice skate. I wanted to be a musician before I could play an instrument, you know. I was a DJ with 5 CDs, you know, like, I was a graphic designer with a laptop and a stolen Photoshop, you know, like, it's that thing is, it's driven by the fuel. Like, I want to do this. This looks good. I'm drawn to this. There's no plan. Let's figure out if it works and if it doesn't work. And we talk about those as successes, but just like, you know, Apple and Google and everybody else has got a scrappy out of ideas that never worked, we've got the same experiences. Whereas, you know, I want to celebrate here, like, my successes in a way that, you know, they were stepping stones. They got me somewhere. Well, of course, we all have these moments going, oh, crikey, that didn't work out, you know? But we've learned from it. Like, we put our foot wrong. And sometimes it's that, sometimes it's that sort of weird, oh, feeling, you know, like, oh, shouldn't have done that. But if it hasn't happened, then I wouldn't be here, you know, doing the right, not doing the thing I'm doing today, which I'm enjoying. So I think there is a path that is like a big blender. that, you know, you put all of the experiences and something will come out as a result of it, you know, and it's normally like a distilled good version, because we've gone through all of these things and just left them behind, but I learned from them. So
absolutely. And you, and what's wonderful is, A, it's good to get things wrong because you learn how to do it right. You eliminate things that you could waste years of your life doing that might not be for you, but you only find out that by trying and jumping in the deep end. And also, you know, what's wonderful is you might bring something completely fresh and different through that lack of training or that lack of expertise. So it's always better to come in naive with that beginner's mindset and find out, because then you get the upside of not knowing and trying things that other people might be too locked into a system to try. But also, you will learn by doing it. So you get the best of both. It's that old adage of, you know, it's fine to break the rules if you know the rule you're breaking, because then it becomes a conscious decision. But at the start, it's fine to do it badly, you know, you kind of have to. And anyway, otherwise, how do you build communities? Because you get stories out of those mistakes. You meet people you would never have met. There's so many value. There's so much value to doing it. And, you know, we live at a time where there's a massive abuse of data, I guess, overuse of data, which is damaging to creativity. Still early days, so we're learning. I don't think it's chronic or, you know, or terminal. I think we'll find a better balance with that, I think, particularly as things like AI grow. But all of this comes back to the self and the teachings in this book, you know, the peace with the self and working on yourself. It doesn't matter what the current tool of the day is, or the trend, or the things that we're doing wrong. If you're good with yourself at your roots, and like you said, if you start somewhere, learn where your baseline level is, then it doesn't matter where you are. You get that wonderful feeling of progression, because as you move forward, you will progress. So it's cool, you know?
I think having a strong baseline means that you don't get blown over by a small, you know, small breeze. Because I think it's just a solid foundation helps you to do it. So I've been to an incredible talk by a guy called Piers Lini, I think that's his name. He used to be on Dragon's Den, and he did talk on AI at a random business conference I found myself the other week. And you know what? It's here. It's coming. Like, there was, you know, with photographers, you know, with artists, photography arrived, and obviously the artist has to adapt, you know, with steam engines and whatever. Like, we had to adapt to things, like, as Henry Ford said, like, you know, people would want faster horses, not a car. Yet the people with the car, like, they didn't want a car. Like, well, I want faster horses. And I think this is where we are right now. So it's the conversation about, like, the AI is not a threat. The threat is that somebody who uses AI might outperform you. Like, obviously, like, we have these tools and we use them, and we should use them. Obviously, this is how we progress. Like, we're not going to stand still. Just, you know, in a certain way, we should take about a decade to work out everything that we've done, like, read every book and listen to every track, because there's so much stuff we've created that no one ever listened to or no one ever read. But, you know, we get new typefaces every week. We're doing new books every week. You know, we get everything every week, you know, because this is the democratization of creativity and the loss of sort of gatekeepers, that we can just put our stuff out there and find our sort of fans and tribes and, you know, and followers and that kind of stuff. But it's about the thing that you would do it even if no one was paying attention. You know, I would still be writing books if no one was reading them. I would still be trying to put together something, because it's a catalyst for the soul. It's an expression that you can sort of just put out there and say, look, I'm growing, I'm moving, you know, like, I'm not standing still. I think this is the part. So, yeah.
Are you good at taking time out? I know I need to be. I know the benefits. I could articulate to you, even in scientific terms, why it's necessary. Not very good at doing it. I'm getting slightly better. I need to work on it. Are you, you know, because you're as busy as I am, if not more. Are you any good at resting?
So I follow my advice. I have to follow my advice. And I didn't work. When I published my books last year, I had to take 3 weeks off. And my wife was like, you need to do some work. You're grumpy. I was like, I'm not burnt out, but I was just exhausted. You know, like, because as you know, you it takes the time to write a book and publish a book and design it, especially if you're doing it with a small team. Then I went to launch it in Canada. We did incredibly well, which was like everything worked. But I haven't stopped for, let's say, a year. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to do anything, even though, you know, I'm going to watch everything on Netflix and just chill, like not do any work. And my wife still would say, like, you need to do some work. It makes you happy. I was like, I cannot go and do more of what I just did because I need a break. I just need to do this. And what I've done for an ongoing basis, I've made my sort of discipline a priority. So I do have set times of what I do and when. So then my mise en place is very much defined of when I'm doing what. So as opposed to trying to find that sort of Stefan Sagmeister's, you know, a year and 7 years of taking off, I'm trying to find an hour in every day where I'm just got time to think, you know, just got time to rest. Or, you know, there's, you know, in words of Arthur Brooks, you know, I exercise every day, not when I have time. So I try to do my exercise every morning just to get it done, you know, just be rigid, because we tell ourselves, and that goes to your previous point, you know, you need to know which rule you're breaking. I always say, well, you can start a riot, but where are you going with it? You know, after a while, the riot just gets a little bit monotonous and it doesn't make any sense. And with our creative lives, you know, like I think this is what we were describing earlier, that mise en place is your best friend. Like having, like, what am I going to do? How am I going to do it? When is the best way to do it? Because when people say, like, hey, I had this idea at 4 o'clock in the morning, well, that means you haven't written your to-do list yesterday properly. You know, like, you haven't offloaded. Like, you're not a genius. Sorry to break it to you, but you haven't just worked on your mental overload. So taking breaks is more about, like, how do you manage your workload so you can sustain everything that you do in a way that, you know, you can do it most often, like, rather than, you know what, we just got to give it a big push and then nothing, you know. I think that just then just the breakage and damage. So yeah, that's one way. I mean, I've got definitely a plan after having been building a few more things since the books. I want to come back from off and pretty much just do a little bit of work and cycle for most of the summer. I just want to do that. I've been building, and I was like, okay, I'm going to take a break, because you know what? We've built everything that we need to build. Now we just need to sell it, get it out there and distribute it, you know, like just build these things. But there's a time when we need to put the shift in, and there's a time when you sort of offset it. And as any other creative person, I've never been good at taking holidays or looking after myself, because it was an excuse. No, working was an excuse. I was a broken man. And the instant gratification of having commissions, you know, invoices, new work, all of that stuff, that was beautifully yet corrosive, you know. It was like a, you know, beautiful version of sugar, you know, like keeps you happy until it's corrosive. So yeah, I think the discipline about, I'm going to work, you know, from 9:30 till 11 every day, and then from, you know, 7 till 9 or whatever, like, because we all have families and different, you know, obligations. It provides for most amazing time, because I know that I can spend 3 hours thinking about an idea that I have an hour to make. When I get to that hour, I'm not going to try seven different ideas. I've been thinking about this idea all day. I'm going to make it, you know? So it's beautiful to work when you're inspired, but that comes with different sort of lifestyle. It comes with a different way, because, you know, that Usain Bolt can run your 100 meters at 2 o'clock in the morning because he has to, not because he wants to, or because there is an idea. Like, you know, we are ready for that moment. So when you think about creative careers, people think that inspiration will hit them on the nose, and they say, well, creativity doesn't happen between 9 and 5. Okay, it doesn't, you know, the ideas don't happen between 9 and 5. But if nine to five is your time, then you maximize it. You actually look into how to do it. And if your creative time is some other time, just maximize that time, maximize the element. Because most of the time, as you know, we will spend bleeding other things into our time. You know, that mise en place will then have all sorts of things, and it'll be like a ready, steady cook with like a car battery and a Sainsbury shopping bag. You know, it's just like, it's not going to be exactly food ingredients that you need to build with. And that's the problem, because, you know, people say, well, how do you stop yourself looking on Twitter? Like, well, don't post anything. Don't hope that there'll be something back. Like, you know, that's the same applies for Instagram or LinkedIn. Like, if you want a piece from these apps, don't put the bait out, because that's your mental hook, you know, and then delete it off your phone and get your work done and do it for, not set yourself 25 minutes of work. If you get your 25 minutes done, if you want to carry on, you carry on. But you mentioned a quote from the Athart quote from the first section. But it's the second one that I like even more, which is from Brian Solis, that information overload is our own choice. No one's telling us to be on every platform. We have chosen to do that. You know, just like we buy strawberries in the winter, we vote with our money for strawberries in winter. And just like we vote with energy, like we decide to choose, you know, to check our messages or whatever plug-in at any time of the day. No one's making us to do it. It's our own choice. Yep.
It is personal choice. You're absolutely right. And I like the thing about the 4 a.m. because that's, you know, there's a chapter in my book about the unconscious and about dreams. And the reason I brought up rest is I know how important it is to allow the unconscious to do its job, which is equally as important as the conscious mind for, you know, especially in terms of solutions to problems and big ideas. That stuff comes from the unconscious. And we feed the mind with so much. If we feed it with too much and don't take time to rest, like you said, that's when it spills out at 4 a.m. It's not like we're having some nocturnal revelation. It's actually that, like you said, you if you allow for that hour in the day of nothingness, you know, I had Tom Hodgkinson, who is the editor of Idler magazine, on the show, and he's in the book too. And it's a magazine, it's not about laziness, contrary to belief. You know, some people think it's about privilege and laziness. It's not. It's about fulfillment in life. It's about taking time out to appreciate the things around us. Sit on a bench, stare at a wall, allow the mind to do its thing. It's all about that. And when you allow for time to do that, even if it is just half an hour or an hour, the chances are those revelations are going to come in the daytime and not at 4 a.m. because you're in control of your thoughts. I think that's a really good point there. You know, I've had it recently because I'm completely bombarded with client work, and you know, I'm in the run-up to a book release, so of course I am. You have to accept that this is necessary stress, so that's fine. But I'm annoyingly getting woken up by ideas now, and I don't want to go back to that because I've got young twins. So you know, it's kind of pissing me off, and after the book's out, I want to get back to placing great importance on rest and allowing my brain to do its thing in that daytime. Like you said, you can schedule to a degree, because you know, it's, again, it goes back to the grounding of self. So, you know,
I think when you think about all the freedom that you had as a teenager or in your 20s, you know, before you were married or before you had all of these sort of these things, but you don't look back and say, oh my word, that was the most amazing time, because you're like, you never know what you should be doing. You never know if what you're doing is the right thing. And you're like, well, there's a freedom in limitations. Like when you know what you do, when you tell yourself, like, okay, this is what I stand for, this is what I do, this is what I want to achieve, you know, this is what I'm focused on, because the outcome is what I want to actually have. Having all the freedom and like working at any time you want, like you see people like Mr. Bingo saying, well, I want to create the idea, but I'm not in the place to make it. And I was kind of pondering that in the opening chapter of Mindful Creative, which is called the chapter's called Creativity Start with a Blank Piece of Paper, because you know, creativity make us feel all sorts of adjectives from A to Z and more, you know, like you can be enthralled and you can be, you know, excited and all of that stuff. Whereas when we actually get to be creative, you're like, okay, I need to battle this blank piece of paper. I need to really sort of fight it out. Because you can press all the buttons on Midjourney or DALL-E's or whatever, and you can have something. But to have that really meaningful expression of what we create, you really need to put something out of yourself out there and battle it out with a piece of paper. So I say the blank piece of paper is like a boxing ring that, you know, sees the hopes and fears, hopes and dreams, sometimes, you know, punched and battled and maybe careers terminated. But the reason why I'm saying it is that as creatives, if we allow ourselves to think in that way, that, you know, things should happen whenever we feel like it, we put ourselves on the wrong footing. And sometimes to other people, we look a bit foolish, because like, so you do what you want to do, but you're not doing the right time when you want to do it or in the right place. Now, sometimes when you have an idea, you can't do it. Well, what do you really want? Because I look at builders outside my window, they work from 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. They don't feel inspired to lay the brakes in a certain way when they feel like it. And we think, well, creativity is this thing we can't sort of distill, because it only shows up at some certain times. But the reason why I wrote Creativity for Sale is because we work for other people. They vote with their money for our services. We work for somebody else to certain restrictions and certain limitations. Creative people sometimes see as a negativity, like there's a negative aspect, like, well, they asked me to do this. Well, they're paying you for it. You know, there's lots of people in the world getting paid for something they freaking don't want to do, you know, but that's their jobs. What we can do, we can actually think about our concepts and processes, like, how can I get to do this with these people so they still pay me? In fact, I can give them more than they've asked for, and I can guide this process. And you know what? No one knows everything about creative process. So maybe I can actually enlighten them about, you know what? Have you considered this? This is how it's done. By the way, this has been done 20 times differently like this. It didn't work. Are you still want to do it for the 21st time? It's all about communications. Like, actually, again, working on yourself, bringing that really solid baseline that doesn't blow you over with the first tremor. You know, like, this is, it's about us. Like, how do you conduct your creativity is unfortunately much greater than a nice, you know, set of, you know, pencils or paintbrushes or, you know, a shiny laptop. Is who you are. And you may have seen a quote from Carnegie Institute that 85% of our commercial success is due to communication. 15% is the skills, because who you are, how you get perceived, how you carry yourself, how you communicate, how you excited. You know, sometimes that wins you jobs, because you don't have to listen to many interviews to find out that people who won commissions over some bigger teams were the ones who were more enthusiastic. They're like, "Oh, you were really excited about a project." I'm like, "Yes, yeah, absolutely," because this is an opportunity. Like, you came knocking on my door. I'm happy to see you. Like, let's see if we can make it work, rather than, "Oh, how much are you going to pay me? That's not enough. I don't want to do this. You know, yeah, I'm not really sure about that," and whatever. Like, we are conflicted most of the time. And like, it's, in my opinion, quite easily solved. Like, you just be honest to what you actually want to achieve. Like, what do you want? How good you want to be? Where are you heading? How much is too much for you? Just work it out. Like, literally be honest with yourself, because until that point, you're just going to be another moaning person on Twitter going, "Ooh, life is unfair." Well, there's many things unfair in the world, but it's not, like, your career is not one of them.
You're absolutely right. And there's this, you know, misnomer, age-old misnomer, that creativity is this ethereal genius thing that is innate in some people and comes to us out of nowhere. It's absolutely not true. You can't 100% control it, but you can very much learn its ways. You can learn yourself. You can lean into certain things. And once you start to actually understand the way it works and those parameters, which is why I'm writing this stuff and doing these podcasts, to understand it more, then there is a big degree of control. You know, the whole flow state thing, you articulate that nicely about the ways we can kind of engineer the right conditions and eliminate distractions and things. It's about being completely honest with yourself about your, you know, your shortcomings or your distractions or your tendencies. And I was, one of my favorite podcasts I ever did was with Lauren Kelly, who's a behavior designer, and I'd never come across that term before.
I love her. I've met her once. She's incredible.
She's awesome. She's brilliant, is Lauren. And but, you know, even after the session when we had the podcast, you know, she looked around my studio and asked me, were there certain things that I might have considered counterproductive? And there was always like a 15-minute void of time in between drawing at my messy desk and then scanning and moving to my computer, where I'd get a brew, I'd get distracted with social media. And again, she just, you know, she encouraged me to maybe move some things around and make physical changes to my environment and things like that. And there's actually I find so much joy in all of that self-discovery and learning and gradual marginal gains as well. So, you know, there is a lot more control than we allow ourselves to believe about creativity.
Let me just add something to what you said. I want to recommend you a book called Buy Back Your Time by someone called Dan Martell. And it's very much about what he says. Like, you know, we're very good at, as creators, very good at giving ourselves all the job titles and all the job roles. And sometimes, like, how do I grow? How do I actually allow myself to grow? Because you get so much satisfaction by doing things yourself. Like, if you've got 12 people doing 12 tasks for one outcome, when you do all of your 12 tasks yourself, you're like, "I feel like I've grown up, I feel I've learned." But, you know, do you really go beyond your potential? So actually having other people collaborating with, sometimes it's very good. And Dan Martell in this book is sort of really spells it out. Like, you know, those 15 minutes of where you get distracted and how you do things, he makes you think about them. He also makes you think about the things that you do for other people that you don't have to do when you can pay somebody else to do it. Mm-hmm. So his content is very good. So I recommend that book. It's how do you improve on the daily routine and daily, you know?
That sounds activity. Brilliant. Yeah, I'll definitely be picking that one up. Brilliant. Well, so let's wrap up with the book. So where can people get Creativity for Sale and The Mindful Creative? Because I mean, I just as a reader myself, I would strongly recommend you get them together as a pack, because they marry beautifully.
Definitely design as a pack. It's like what I say is the start of the 21st century creative toolkit. You know, like, how do you do that? So mindful create, like in the series, there'll be 5 books. And the first book is pretty much mindful creative. Like, how do you actually prepare yourself for what's coming next? If that makes sense. And I've basically released it along with Creativity for Sellers. Like, if you want to create, if you want to start a creative business or a career, like, this is how you kind of build your own personal brand of creativity and what you do with it. There'll be a book with it. Second book on that side, which is about how do you create a product. So it's kind of like create, sell, repeat, because as a creative person, you want to have a product. You want to do things, because you will go to a conference and there'll be someone saying, well, I've given up on client work. I'm like, you're 60 and I'm 21. This doesn't work. You know, I need you to, like, how do you can stop? How do you stop client work? You know? So I think, again, just with doing just the same information about creativity and productivity and all of business, there's so much content out there and so much advice on how you can actually start a product business. And as creators, mainly do it for other people, not for ourselves, because we say, well, we're the creative ones, they're the business people. We are the same, especially if you're running your own thing. So there'll be a book on that. And then there's a book called No Risk, No Story, which is a slogan that keeps sort of following me around, which kind of made me decipher what I've been doing for the last 20 something years and 8 years of publishing. And like, no risk, no story. We wouldn't be here if I was, you know, not talking about books, or we're talking about something different. But I followed something which was this sort of this burning obsession, not passion, but obsession about, like, okay, I want to do this because no one's stopping me. So No Risk, No Story is my talk in Barcelona, kind of mixed from all of these sort of elements that, you know, what if you actually want, whatever, everything is said and done, you're like, what should I have done? You know, what could I have done? Or I wish I did something differently. Whereas when you speak to someone like Hector, it's like, I would never change anything. Like, this is the right way to have arrived where we are. And I want to write a book that helps you make your ideas happen, like helps you to actually, you know, pursue this thing. It's more or less like me saying, do it, just do it. this is all about it. Like, you don't have to wait for permission to be creative. You don't have to wait for permission to create a business. Just literally, there is so much out there that no one can do it. And I think that book's going to be quite sort of pursuit of happiness. Of like, you know, when people say, oh, I just need a couple more projects and I'll be happy, or I need to meet the person of such and such, so I'll be happy. For me, it's just like looking at dating experts and going, you know, how do they sort of see these things? Because in our lives, there could be fire all around us, but yet we think that, you know, we are perfect for everything, you know. So No Risk, No Story is that in a series. Plus, there's a couple of brand new books. But it can be found pretty much anywhere. I've got distribution deals, so we can find me at Waterstones or anywhere, you know, on Amazon and all of those outlets. Or you can buy signed books directly from my stores.
Big thank you to Radim Melnick for taking the time to chat for today's episode. His books are well worth an investment. The Mindful Creative and Creativity for Sale. They are part of a stable of, like I said, I think 6 books now. The man's impressive. He's a workhorse, and it's great to see, and it's very valuable material for our industry and anyone either interested in creativity, practicing creativity, spearheading their own direction in their lives and their careers with creativity. You can head to radimmelnick.co.uk. You can also head to brand new, that's brandnewbooks.co.uk as well, for all of his previous stuff. I'm sure he's got the book of ideas and everything else up there. And it's, I hope you enjoyed that chat. I loved that. I could talk to Radim all day about all of this stuff, the mental side of it, the energy, the attitudes. I think it's a bottomless pit of exploration. I'm not going to lie, I'm 41 now, and I just don't see myself, you know, as long as I'm able, ever not talking about this stuff and ever not researching it and pushing for more content and writing and podcasting and sharing. And who knows where the world will be at that point. But, you know, I like to think I'd have left a significant body of work by that point, whatever it might look like and whenever it might be. Thank you for listening, guys. I hope you enjoy. You can get both of those books. Like I said, you can also get my own The Creative Condition book at bentallenwriter.com/shop now. The show just rolls on weekly. I probably should take a break at some point, but do you know the momentum is helping at the moment, and the consistency and the branding, and it's another front that I'm just learning on, and there's all these talks booked in as I move around. I've just been up to Manchester for the book launch last week. Thank you for those guys who came out for that. That was a busy old night. Very, very good stuff. I was, let's just say, a little bit tender on the Friday on the train back down to Salisbury. More like a waxwork of myself, if I'm being honest. But, you know, few and far between these days as a father, so it's harder. But it's all learning, it's all exciting, and some great guests coming up. What else? Big thank you to the founding supporter of the show, IllustrationX.com. See all their global range of illustrators and animators now over there. Check out the Ukrainian Institute, and please do take a moment to support them however you can best. ui.org.ua. That's about it from me. Get in touch. Hello at bentallon.com if you want to have a chat, or on the social. LinkedIn is the primary connections these days. I will have a look at my Instagram messages. Beyond that, I'm sorry it's a little bit late occasionally. I'm still having a battle with social and, you know, what platforms do I commit to. And we talked about the information overload on there, and I've kind of been making a decision, you know, to just to read more, to fertilise this knowledge of creativity and start taking it directly to people rather than spending too much time pumping content out on there. So always ebbing and flowing in terms of my approach to that stuff. So might change next week. Who knows? Interested in hearing any tips on that anyway. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. That's it from me. Big thank you to Randy Melanich and Illustration X for making the show possible this week. Take care and have a great week.